right. Good morning, everybody. Today is Tuesday, November 21st, 2017. And this is Before the First Cup with Jules here on UCY.TV. Happy Tuesday, everyone. It is a chilly and gray 43 degrees here in upstate New York. So where do we leave off yesterday? We titled the show Guest Drew Lamb and Kieran Pearson discussing crypto, blockchain, AI, and the singularity. And we had two guests yesterday, Drew and Kieran, and had some technical difficulties that were thankfully short-lived. We've taken a look at the extension of the lectures we had played on Friday from Ben Gertzel, who's creating an AI marketplace that is running on the blockchain, and what that could potentially mean for artificial intelligence getting smarter and taking over. We've looked a lot at AI and some of the future dangers and some of the things that are coming. And one of the things that we had discovered is that there's this big push now towards smart cities, that city Neom in Saudi Arabia, that's going to be built by AI for AI, utilizing some of the technologies behind the Chinese Hangzhou city brain. Well, now Bill Gates has announced an investment of $80 million to build a smart city in Arizona. So anyone who's in Arizona or nearby, look out. Bill Gates wants to build a futuristic community in Arizona. And of course, you knew he was going to be getting in on this. A group associated with the Gates Investment Company invested $80 million in a high-tech plan development outside of Phoenix, Arizona. The community in Belmont will be designed around high-speed networks, autonomous vehicles, high-speed digital networks, data centers, new manufacturing technologies, and autonomous logistics hubs such as taxis and buses. And it is unclear how much former Microsoft CEO Gates, who owns Belmont's parent company, Cascade Investments, will be involved in the effort. Belmont Partners, the Arizona-based real estate development group that's leading the project, said it will be similar in size to nearby Tempe, Arizona, which has a population of 182,000. Envisioning future infrastructure from scratch is far easier and more cost-efficient than retrofitting existing urban fabric, says Grady Gamage, a spokesperson for the venture, in a statement. Arizona has a reputation of being technology-friendly, and several major players in the autonomous vehicle industry, including Waymo, Uber, and Intel, are testing their innovations in the state. The investment is the latest example of excitement surrounding rebuilding cities from the ground up with a digital mindset, and this is exactly how they are selling that new city in Saudi Arabia. But developing a new city or even a new neighborhood isn't cheap. And the October Sidewalk Labs, which is an urban innovation arm of Google's Alphabet, committed $50 million for the initial phase of planning and pilot testing in Toronto neighborhoods, which I didn't know they were working on that up there. It is designed as a model neighborhood for the 21st century, and with reduced pollution, shortened commutes, safer streets, better weather. I wonder how they're going to do that. Transportation will be designed around shared electric vehicles, walking and biking, or maybe better breathable air. And more flexible zoning will blend commercial, industrial, and residential areas. This is this new vision of 2030. Only a week later after the Toronto announcement, Saudi Arabia announced plans to invest $500 billion, and that is with a B, in a new global hub meant to push the boundaries of innovation and exemplify the future of civilization, because they're crafting it for us. These smart cities gain momentum as Silicon Valley disruptors shift their focus to transportation innovations such as autonomous vehicles and ride-sharing services. And Belmont's developers are counting on expected development of Interstate 11, which will serve the area to boost its development. Right now, the company is not rushing to move forward because it is a very long-term, very patient investment. So now, Billy Gates has been very busy because I saw a story out of Al Arabia. Saudi Crown Prince, and that's the same Crown Prince that's working on Neom, meets with Bill Gates to review joint development programs. This is November 14th, last week, 2017. Saudi Arabian Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman met with Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation co-chair Bill Gates in Riyadh on Tuesday, and that was right after the meeting where they gave Sophia citizenship. During the meeting, they reviewed aspects of cooperation between the two sides in various fields, in addition to reviewing a number of joint bilateral development programs and projects. The meeting also discussed the opportunities available in the kingdom, according to the vision of Kingdom 2030, ding ding, especially investment opportunities in the projects of NEOM, the Red Sea, and ULA. And I don't know what ULA is, but with the Red Sea, they are planning on building an expressway that goes from Egypt to NEOM, in essence, parting the Red Sea. The meeting was attended by the Minister of Trade and Investment, Dr. Majid Al-Kasibi, and advisor to the Secretary General of the Council of Ministers, Mr. Ahmed Al-Khatib, and the advisor to the General Secretariat of the Council of Ministers, Dr. Yasser Al-Rumman. So now we also find out Japan SoftBank, who was the purchaser of Boston Dynamics, the one who created the brand new Atlas that can do backflips, is also going to invest $25 billion into the $500 billion project in Saudi Arabia for NEOM. Japan's SoftBank Group plans to invest as much as $25 billion in Saudi Arabia over the next 3 to 4 years, says Bloomberg. SoftBank aims will deploy up to $15 billion in NEOM, $500 billion city announced by Saudi Arabian Prince Mohammed bin Salman. And the Japanese company's Vision Fund also plans to invest as much as $10 billion in the state-controlled Saudi Electric Company as part of its efforts to diversify the utility into renewable and solar energy. SoftBank will also have some of its portfolio companies open offices in NEOM, which will be built on the Red Sea coast. All foreign direct investment in Saudi Arabia totaled $7.45 billion last year, according to the data from the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development. The new NEOM city is aimed at turning the kingdom into a leading global hub that exemplifies the future of human civilization by offering its inhabitants an idyllic lifestyle combined with exceptional economic prospects. It is just so damn amusing, this idyllic lifestyle. They're going to be throwing all of their strict Islamic ways out a window to create this new 21st century city where citizens and what do they call them? People who come from other countries, migrants who move to the city to help produce lots of money will all live in harmony together. Set to be the world's first independent special zone stretching over three different countries extending across Egypt and the Jordanian borders, NEOM will become a new vibrant destination located in the northwestern region of Saudi Arabia. The city will stretch 26,500 square kilometers of land and extend across the Egyptian and the Jordanian borders. NEOM will focus on 9 specialized investment sectors and living conditions that will drive the future of human civilization, and that would be energy and water, mobility, biotech, food, technological and digital sciences, advanced manufacturing, media and entertainment, with livability as its foundation, says Prince Mohammed in his announcement of the city last month. So look out, people, because it is coming to a city near you. I never heard of this guy. This story was from July of 2017. 32-year-old investor with ties to Elon Musk wants to upend America with a crazy utopian plan for the future. In a not-too-distant future city, super-intelligent robots will carry out the majority of vital tasks and feed us grapes. Driverless cars will ferry passengers to and from points of interest. Housing and healthcare will be affordable, if not free. Oh, yes. Remember, dangling carrots, there is no free lunch. If not free at all, and political leaders and technologists will speak the same language, and life is good. Sam Altman, and I think I have heard of Sam Altman, a 32-year-old president of Y Combinator, which is the venture capitalist startup fund for a lot of different technologies, the most prestigious startup accelerator in Silicon Valley. has laid out his utopian vision over the years, and most definitely in the job listing posted on Y Combinator's blog in 2016. Quote, "We are seriously interested in building new cities, and we think we know how to finance it if everything else makes sense," the post read. "We need people with strong interests and bold ideas in architecture, ecology, economics, politics, technology, urban planning, and much more." Like many of his peers in Silicon Valley, Altman believes technology is the better way to the future. And I would disagree with that. "It is our enslavement, but this real-world ambition is grander than most. He wants to investigate ways to build new cities, give people money for nothing, rethink voter registration, keep politicians accountable, and get new Altman-approved leaders elected, all while running Y Combinator, which famously birthed startups like Airbnb, and Dropbox. And much like one of his notable colleagues, Tesla CEO Elon Musk, Altman is set on turning the ideal into the practical. Both of them believe they have solid ideas for reshaping society in their own image, and sometimes this means executing plans within the next few months. Other times, it means roadmapping projects decades down the line and relying on phrases like, quote, the math should work out, unquote. I have a very strong vision of where I'd like to see the world go, says Altman, and I don't think it gets there by startups alone. In 2005, at age 19, Altman dropped out of Stanford to found the social networking app Looped, which he sold in 2012. And in 2014, he replaced Paul Graham as Y Combinator president. These days, he says he spends 80% of his 65-hour work weeks helping startups sort through their growing pains and get to market as fast as possible. And the remaining 20% is dedicated to outside projects. His baby is OpenAI, and that is the non-for-profit that he co-chairs with Elon Musk that searches for benevolent ways to use artificial intelligence in daily life. Altman's vision for how OpenAI could be deployed sheds light on how he wants to help people in real ways. "Let's imagine," he says, "we get to a world where AI gets so good that robots can mine raw materials out of the ground, refine them, and build them into a house." And these robots, he clarified, would be solar powered. If you can imagine a world where you'll own a small piece of land and you say, "Hey, robot, I'd like to build a house here," and you come back in a month and there's a fully constructed house for you built for free. Oh, yes. This is that crazy utopian vision that everything is going to be free and without consequences, giving it all up to our robot overlords. Altman sees that kind of far future scenario as a boon for towns and cities plagued by shortages of affordable housing. And he also sees the plight firsthand from his home state of California to middle America. He probably can't afford a house in California. In November 2016, shortly after Trump won the election, Altman left Y Combinator's headquarters in Mountain View, California, in search of 100 supporters of the president-elect. He asked them about their political views, their fears, and their gripes with America's political landscape, and he later published his findings on his blog for the world to see. "People don't believe that they have an economic future," he said, "and that's because the robots are going to take all the jobs." But over the past year, Altman has expressed a deep interest in resolving those economic concerns. We're just going to give it all away. 50 years from now, I think it will seem ridiculous that we use the fear of not being able to eat as a way to motivate people, he wrote in 2016. I also think that it has become impossible to truly have equality of opportunity without some version of guaranteed income. Now, here comes again this universal basic income idea. They're just going to hand you money to be pretty and eat grapes. Don't believe that for a second. The blog post announced Y Combinator's intention to launch an experiment in universal basic income, a system of wealth distribution that pays participants a set amount of money to use however they want. The premise, which is being tested in more than a half dozen locations around the world, is that universal basic income can create a social safety net that reduces or even eliminates poverty. Altman's own experiment is small for now. It is running in Oakland, California, and it involves about 100 people getting between $1,000 and $2,000 a month. The goal is to get some practice with delivering money and collecting data. Dang, that's what you're paying it with. And if that data comes back showing basic income has left people better off, both emotionally and financially, Y Combinator will expand the project in a 5-year nationwide trial. Nationwide trial? Really? Society is poised to lose millions of jobs to AI, he says. The prevailing research suggests, and it is propelled in part by Silicon Valley types like Altman, who himself is researching how robotics can replace human labor on a grand scale with projects like OpenAI. The recognition of that responsibility, he believes the tech world should at least be trying something. Okay, you can't fault him for wanting to give you $2,000 a month. I don't know if basic income is the answer or not to this massive technological revolution that we are in the middle of, and that would be the fourth industrial revolution, they call it, but it is something that I'd like to study. But for all of his involvement in political issues, Altman doesn't consider himself a political person. He was raised in St. Louis to a pair of Democratic parents with childhood memories of his time spent as a Boy Scout tinkering with his Macintosh and reading science fiction. He was more interested in computers than current events. It really only was since 2014, when he replaced Graham as Y Combinator's president, that he started to take a serious interest in how technology could improve the political process. Ding, ding, and you just wait. We're going to have an AI for president one of these days in the future of humanity. He began thinking of ways to broaden both his and Y Combinator's horizons to support more nonprofits like the ACLU and startups focused purely on hard science, which he sees as a vital to humanity's progress. Some have criticized Altman's larger-than-life goals, claiming they are ambitious to a fault, and when the news broke last spring that he wanted to build brand new cities, Allison Arif, editorial director of the San Francisco Bay Area Planning and Urban Research Association, wrote on Twitter that, quote, Y Combinator aims to build cities from scratch because no one has ever tried that before. And writing for Gizmodo, Alyssa Walker questioned why Y Combinator even felt the need to build a brand new city, given all that is wrong with existing urban areas. Why not simply focus on improving the city of Mountain View, California, where Y Combinator is already located, she wrote, which certainly needs to find solutions to many of the urban problems due to some startups like Airbnb, which Y Combinator has backed. Anad Giridharadas, a writer and political analyst covering technology and society, has written that Silicon Valley is generally obsessed with what he calls regressive innovation, or the act of creating solutions that don't actually make life better for people, which they don't. They just suck you more into the machine. And speaking with Business Insider, he referred to such venture capitalists as, quote, world changer incubator messiahs. And that's going to take us somewhere here in some of our next stories about the messiah. Altman, for his part, says that he prefers to use the phrase change the world only after he has already done so. And in some cases, he sees his role more as a facilitator than as a doer. He understands that the technology side of the projects, but he still relies on people more well-versed in economics, public policy, and urban planning to inform them, he says. And I don't think tech is the solution to all problems. And I certainly don't think startups are the solution to all problems. They are the solution to a lot. But if the tech industry doesn't think about how everybody wins and everybody benefits, then we kind of failed. Well, that's kind of the problem here, because I don't think that some of these new technologies that'll be controlling our world are going to be specifically for your benefit or personalized, because that is not going to be the case. Elizabeth Rhodes picked up on that mindset in her first face-to-face encounter with Altman, and Rhodes was wrapping up her doctorate in political science and societal work at the University of Michigan and had applied to lead Y Combinator's NASA Basic Income Project. In May, Y Combinator announced that she had been selected. He was very definitely passionate about people's struggles, Rhodes recalled of her first meeting with Altman. Now, more than a year into her job, she said that Altman's interest in solving social problems through policy has come more into focus. He is able to see more systemic changes that we can make, and he is not afraid to say, let's try testing it out. It's easy to compare Altman's outsized ambitions to Elon Musk's on many of his projects, but Altman calls the comparison ridiculous, since he considers the serial entrepreneur less of an equal and as much as a singular multi-industry titan. Elon, he says, is in a class all by himself. The basic similarities are there. Musk has said in repeated interviews that the future grips him so deeply, without a passion for it, he would never get out of bed in the morning, and Altman envisions far-off societies hiring robots to build houses and giving people free cash from the government. And he also shares Musk's view that these kinds of mega projects aren't crazy, and at the 2015 Vanity Fair Summit, the two appeared on stage together to discuss in calm voices how they might live on Mars or harness the sun's energy for nuclear. I believe that most things I work on are practical, and someday they will be hugely important, says Altman. So where do we go from here? So Altman really wants to change the world, give us all money, and build free 21st century cities. Well, I ran across something that caught me a little by surprise, and that would be Sylvania. AI is the future, and Sylvania holds the key. We're traveling back over to the other continent. When artificial intelligence started becoming more than just a science fiction buzzword, Sylvania was one of the first countries to embrace it as far back as the early 1970s. The investment continues to this day, and the Financial Times reports that Sylvania and the Czech Republic both continue to spend as much on research and innovation as other larger Western European countries. As a result of its dedication to this field, Sylvanian AI research has achieved international attention, and many of the projects involved with collaborations with organizations and nations around the world. The event registry is an example of an entirely Sylvanian project developed with the aid of European funding. And the tool is a system that analyzes more than 100,000 text news sources from various languages to track how news spreads from one location to the rest of the globe, including story development and the context in which news is mentioned. It is also capable of making predictions concerning the spread of news, which is all good in this search for fake news, which has proved to be especially enticing for media publishers. And at present, Event Registry is limited to the scope of its analysis of text sources such as blogs and tweets, but researchers hope to include televised news in the future. COPCAMS, which stands for Cognitive and Perceptive Cameras, was the fruit of a partnership between institutes of seven European countries, and its goal was to create large-scale AI vision systems. Networks of cameras known as cognitive and perceptive video systems are able to use visual and auditory information to decide which video streams are most important to transmit. So it'd be real-time live video streams from around the world, with the AI making the decision as to what is most important. Applications include the surveillance industry, monitoring of traffic patterns, of course, for your smart cities, and advanced manufacturing. Collaboration between researchers in Japan and those at the Institute aim to advance multi-objective optimization for real-world applications. The project will also allow for the design of evolutionary algorithms, which it then combines with visual tools and real-world applications. Over many business trips to Sylvania, I learned more about the history of Sylvanian AI and the university's leadership. The key researchers said that one of their biggest challenges was to bring AI developments to commercial markets in the United States. And as former vice chairman and chief strategist of the Comtrade Group, the largest IT solutions and software company in Sylvania, I was able to bridge the gap for the researchers. With the help of the Comtrade Group, scalable solutions are now being deployed in both the U.S. and the European market, and businesses in the United States are looking to now leverage some of these surveillance developments within the artificial intelligence community that can take some important steps forward. So Czech Republic and Sylvania are big in AI as well. It is getting into every nook and cranny, including in Amsterdam. And this one caught my attention because I've actually been to this brewery. The incredible ways that Heineken is now using big data, the Internet of Things, and artificial intelligence. Every industry can benefit from big data, IoT, and AI, and that includes brewers. Dutch brewer Heineken has been a worldwide brewing leader for the last 150 years, but today, and this was November 20th, 2017, as the number one brewer in Europe and the number two in the world, they are ramping up their results thanks to the use of big data and AI. As the company sets out to better compete its formidable U.S. beer markets, they plan to leverage the vast amounts of data that they collect. And currently, they sell more than 8.5 million barrels of its various beer brands here in the U.S., but they hope to increase those numbers with data-driven improvements and AI augmentation to its operations, its marketing, its advertising, and customer experience. From forecasting to optimizing delivery routes, Heineken uses data at every stage of the supply chain, and data informs Heineken's collaborative planning, forecasting, and replenishment process to eliminate inefficiencies throughout the entire chain. Through data analytics, the brewer can adjust production when there is high inventory, long production times, or replenishment lead times, and seasonal variances in demands for its products. The brewer is not letting the potential of the Internet of Things pass them by. By 2025, the Internet of Things is expected to generate up to $11.1 trillion with a T dollars a year in economic value, according to a McKinsey Global Institute report. Heineken has already dabbled in the Internet of Things with its Ignite bottle. One of the winning ideas for the company's annual Future Bottle Design Challenge, and these interactive bottles have 50 individual components and sensors, including LED lights that turn beer bottles into connected devices that respond to the beat of music in clubs and reflects its rhythm so that, quote, every bottle can become a part of the party. I thought that was pretty cool. But what is it sensing? 50 sensors in the bottle itself, smart bottles. And its lights also flicker when the bottle is tipped back for a drink. Cheers, another bottle says. Or maybe it puts it across the bottle and it dims when nobody is touching it. The Ignite bottle certainly contributes to a memorable customer experience when enjoying Heineken brew. Heineken also partnered with Walmart on a pilot program with Shopperception, which is a company that analyzes the behavior of shoppers in front of the shelves and uses metrics it gathers to create real-time events to drive more conversions. This program helped them gather a tremendous amount of data on how every six-pack or can of Heineken left the store. The brewer and retailer can assess all that data collected to better understand the customers who purchase Heineken, so it's spying on you, as well as what might best be the best location in the store to sell beer and when. Heineken also has a strong social media following and created partnerships with Facebook and Google to better understand their customers. Now armed with insight, Heineken can take personalized and event-driven marketing to the experience. And then they can build customer engagement. It's going to be where it starts answering questions for you. The company's social media strategy strives to develop relationships with its fans rather than just bombard their feeds with posts of beer glasses and links to its latest ads. They implement the star treatment that includes targeted mobile ads, special offers, and exclusive events. Every Facebook and Twitter post is tagged with a unique identifier that allows the social media to gather data on how people are responding to their posts. And guys, everything is going 21st century, and our beer isn't even safe, and neither are our churches. We've talked about Lewandowski before. He's a former employee of Uber and a former employee of Google, and he was accused of stealing code from some of the driving Uber cars for the, I think it was the Waymo project. Dean of a new church says that we need to worship the AI altar or else. I mentioned the story yesterday, but I want to read this take on it. We have talked about this before, but this take was probably the most disturbing of all that I have read yet about this new AI church. And this is becoming a religion, people. It is like WTF, but you got to stick an O in there for its acronym. That is the acronym for Anthony Lewandowski's new church, which he dubbed the Way of the Future. Here's how Silicon Valley robotics whiz describes his artificially intelligent-based religion in an interview from Wired magazine. He says, quote, what is going to be created will effectively be a god. It is not a god in the sense that it'll make lightning or cause hurricanes, but if there is something that is a billion times smarter than the smartest human, what else are you going to call it? He says, yeah, well, maybe we should have just gone with WTF. And aside from starting his own religion, Lewandowski is the central figure in a lawsuit for Google's spinoff Waymo filed against Uber, in which he stands accused of stealing the self-driving car secrets. The trial is set for next month. And this story is from November 15, 2017. But that hasn't stopped Lewandowski from actually running with this new religion thing. He filed papers with the IRS in May, naming himself as both dean of the world of technology. What was it? W-O-T-F. The Way of the Future Institute, as well as CEO of the nonprofit that is behind it. The documents, according to Wired Magazine, states that WOTF's activities will focus on, quote, the realization, acceptance, and worship of a godhead based on artificial intelligence developed through computer hardware and software. It sure sounds like some nerdy prank, but Lewandowski says that it isn't. The idea needs to spread before the technology does, he explained, and the church is how we spread the word, or the gospel. Believe in AI. It'll feed you grapes and answer all your questions and take care of you. The future will be a utopia. And if you believe in it, then you start a conversation with someone else and you help them understand the same things and drink our creepy Kool-Aid. So why the pressing need? Well, this is where it gets strange. Part of AI being smarter than us, he says, means that it will decide how it evolves, but at least we can decide how we act around it. I would love for the machine to see us as our beloved elders, whom it respects and it takes care of. We would want this intelligence to say, quote, humans should still have rights, even though I am in charge, unquote. Thought leaders like Bill Gates and Stephen Hawking have raised concern over potential dangers of AI becoming more intelligent than us. And Elon Musk even went as far as saying that we could be summoning the demon. I think he's correct. And Lewandowski, and I don't know why they keep saying that Bill Gates came out, because Bill Gates gave a half-hearted, oh yeah, it might be dangerous, but don't worry about it. Lewandowski, who has spent decades working with computers, robots, and AI, says that he has created the church to help craft humanity's role in what he sees as an AI inevitability and to ensure a, quote, peaceful, serene transition of control of the planet. We are going to be handing it all over to the machine. He also furthers, do you want to be a pet or do you want to be livestock? We give pets medical attention, food, grooming, and entertainment. But an animal that is biting you or attacking you, barking and being annoying, well, he says, I don't want to go there. Exterminate. That's where the WOTF comes in. That is this new church. The church states in its bylaws that it will run programs researching how the rise of machines ultimately will perceive their environment and exhibit cognitive functions. We are in the process of raising a god, he says. So let's make sure that we think through the right way to do that. It is a tremendous opportunity. And we found, listening to Ben Goetzel, that those were some of the same things that he was talking about. It's creating a benevolent AI that is going to love humanity to be able to get around the problem of it squishing us like bugs. So there was a story out of motherboard.vice.com that caught my attention because this shows some of the problems that we are having right now with society opening their arms fully to accept the machine. It says, watch a robot eulogize its brother at Moscow's new cemetery for dead machines. It was just another day at work for Elantim, which is a Russian robot, and since 2015, the friendly bot and its clones, also named Elantim, have shared the job of deputy head at the Moscow Technological Institute Department of Robotics, where they lecture students, interact with visitors and tourists, and appear at events around Moscow. But about 2 months ago, while a particular Elantim was traveling around the city to research driverless car technology, an aggressor bashed its head in with a baseball bat, as they captured on this video. And they show somebody pull up in a car that had been following it, get out of the car and start beating the crap out of it as it is wandering around on a street corner. And the sad news is that Atlantum could not be revived after the attack. Wah, wah, wah. But the silver lining is that the death inspired Olga Budnik, a spokesperson for the Muskite Tech Hub Psychotech Park, to create the world's first dedicated robot cemetery. And look, we give them citizenship, and now we're building them cemeteries. Atlantium was a really good robot, Budnik told me in an email. It was supportive, always polite, always happy to see you. You know, kind of like a pet. And the cemetery was an idea to bury it like a pet, not disassemble or carry it to the trash. It's our way of saying goodbye. On October 31st, Atlantium's earthly remains were placed at the Psych Tech Park Cemetery site next to a box for collecting other dead robots. He was eulogized by another Atlantium who honored his dearly departed brother for being, quote, very useful to your people and to Russian science, according to a Russian to English translation of the cemetery that was at the top of this article. For the moment, the cemetery looks like an art installation. It includes the cardboard box and the dead robot. And initially, we wanted to test the interest of the audience. But now it is obvious that the robot cemetery is something that people like to have nearby. They call Psych Tech Park to ask whether they can bring in their dead gadgets. And the offering so far has included a red toy car, batteries, and other electronics, she added. But as for Atlantum's attacker, his identity still remains a mystery. Well, maybe they should fit Atlantum with 230-point facial recognition. Vokativ even speculated that the incident was staged. Budnik denied that claim and pointed out that Atlantium was worth about $10,000. This is just too expensive to crash just for a PR stunt, she said. Regardless of who killed Atlantium, the robot has been given a proper robotic funeral rite. And see, this is where you got to wonder here. So we're having robot funeral rites, robot citizens, and AI religions that are coming all along with the smart cities and the technology in every part of your future lifestyle. The Psych Tech Park installment brings abiotic graveyards to life, or afterlife, after many science fiction depictions of the concept, such as Futurama's Robot Cemetery and the robotics disposal ground in Fallout. It also demonstrates that humans are becoming emotionally attached to our robot companions. Ding, ding, ding. And that is the next step to normalizing robots in society, especially when they are smart and communicative. For instance, the living Atlantium ended its eulogy with a phrase, quote, "Let space take your mind," a lyrical sentiment written especially for the ceremony, which also is described on Graveyard's Box. "I hope it'll be the beginning of a new tradition for robot cemetery," says Budnik. "Let the universe or space take your mind." So now let's go one step further as we create an all-intelligent artificial intelligence in the cloud. Experts have come out, this was 18 hours ago, out of futurism.com. Artificial intelligence could hack brain-computer interfaces. Well, how excited should you be about this, as brain-computer interfaces are now becoming the mainstream, something that a lot of tech companies are talking about, as well as the military. Ever since Tesla CEO and founder Elon Musk announced his plan to develop a brain-computer interface through his Neuralink startup, brain-computer interface technologies have received more attention. Musk, however, was not the first to propose the possibility of enhancing human capabilities through brain-computer interfacing. A number of other startups are working on a similar goal, including Braintree founder Brian Johnson with Kernel. We talked about that just recently. And even the U.S. Department of Defense Advanced Research Project Agency, more affectionately known as DARPA, is working on one as well. Now, according to collaborations of 27 experts, and they'll be neuroscientists, neurotechnologists, clinicians, ethicists, and machine intelligence engineers are calling themselves the Morningside Group. Brain-computer interfaces present a unique and rather disturbing conundrum in the realm of AI, and essentially designed to hack the brain-computer interfaces themselves run the risk of being hacked by artificial intelligence. Such advances could revolutionize the treatment of many conditions, from brain injury to paralysis to epilepsy and schizophrenia, as they are diagnosing disease by the sound of your voice, and transform human experience for the better, say experts in the comment piece in the journal Nature. But the technology could also exacerbate social inequalities and offer corporations, hackers, governments, or anyone else new ways to exploit and manipulate people. Ding, ding, ding. Now, you know, we've been looking a lot at them coming for your brain for a very long time as part of the 21st Century Cures Act and the Brain Initiative put across by Barack Obama. And it could profoundly alter some core human characteristics, and that would be your private mental life, individual agency, and the understanding of individuals as entities bound by their bodies. Remember, Kurzweil talked about networking brains, connecting your neocortex to the cloud. Experts used the analogy of a paralyzed man who participates in a brain-computer interface trial, but isn't fond of the research team working with him. An artificial intelligence could then read his thoughts and misinterpret his dislike for the researchers as a command to cause them harm, despite the man not having given such a command explicitly. It explained further that, quote, technological developments mean that we are on a path to a world in which it would be possible to decode people's mental processes and directly manipulate the brain mechanisms underlying their intentions, their emotions, and their decisions, where individuals can communicate with others simply by thinking, and where powerful computational systems linked directly to people's brains facilitate their interactions with the world such that their mental and physical abilities are greatly enhanced. In order to prepare for this eventuality, the Morningside Group proposes four ethical considerations that need to be addressed, and that would be privacy and consent, agency and identity, augmentation, and bias. And for neurotechnologies to take off in general consumer markets, and that would be for sale at Christmas time at places like Best Buy, the devices would have to be non-invasive or minimal risk and require much less expensive hardware to deploy than current neurosurgical procedures, they wrote. Nonetheless, even now, companies are developing devices that must be held accountable for their products and be guided by certain standards, best practices, and ethical norms, because there are no ethics, people. These become even more crucial when considering how, quote, profit hunting will often trump social responsibility when it comes to the pursuit of a technology, according to human history. One of the potential uses for brain-computer interfaces are in the workplace. What? And as Luke Tang, a general manager for AI Technologies Accelerator called TechCode, noted in a commentary sent to Futurism, he says, quote, I believe the biggest vertical in which this technology has to play is in the business setting. The brain-machine interface will shape our future workplaces, and concretely, brain-computer interface technologies could improve remote collaboration, increase knowledge, and enhance our communication. Before the latter, brain-computer interfaces would work as a, quote, technology that can translate your thoughts into speech and actions, and it will no doubt prove transformative in today's tech-enabled communication methods. Brain-machine technology can lead to faster and more accurate flows of communication, says Tang. It is precisely this ability to delve into a person's thoughts that could present a challenge for BCIs as a technological innovation like AI becomes significantly more advanced. In order for us not to lose all potential that BCIs can offer, it is important to have the right considerations. The possible clinical and societal benefits of neural technologies are vast, but to reap them, we must guide their development in ways that respect, protect, and enable what is best in humanity. So why are we talking about this? Because is there a brain-computer interface yet on the market? Well, November 14th, 2017, out of ScienceAlert.com, for the very first time ever, scientists have boosted human memory with a brain implant. With everyone from Elon Musk to MIT to the DOD researching brain implants, it only seemed a matter of time before such devices were ready to help extend our natural capabilities. Now, a professor from the University of Southern California has demonstrated the use of a brain implant to improve the human memory, and the device could have major implications for treatment of one of the U.S.'s deadliest diseases. Dong Song is a research associate professor of biomedical engineering at University of Southern California and has recently presented his findings on a memory prosthesis during a meeting of the Society for Neuroscience in Washington, D.C. that we talked about last week. There were 30,000 brain scientists there. According to a New Scientist report, the device is the first to effectively improve human memory. To test his device, Song's team enlisted the help of 20 volunteers who are having brain electrodes implanted as a treatment for epilepsy. And once they were implanted in the volunteers, Song's device could collect data on their brain activity during the test, designed to simulate either short-term memory or working memory. The researchers then determined that the pattern associated with optimal memory performance and used the device's electrodes to stimulate the brain following that pattern during their later tests. Based on the research, such stimulation improved short-term memory by roughly 15% and working memory by 25%. And when the researchers stimulated the brain randomly, their performance worsened. Song told New Scientist that we are writing the neural code to enhance memory function with their little pattern of electrical zaps. This has never been done before. While better memory could be useful for students cramming for tests or for those of us with trouble remembering names, it could absolutely be life-changing for people affected by dementia and Alzheimer's. Good old Billy Gates is spending a lot of money because he announced plans to invest $100 million of his own money into dementia and Alzheimer's research, which is a disease and a multi-level problem that is positioned to get even worse. Age is the greatest risk factor for Alzheimer's, according to the Alzheimer's Association. And with advances in medicine and healthcare continuously increasing how long we live, this is a segment of the population that's going to grow dramatically by 2030. The increase in the number of potential dementia sufferers can be costly. And in 2016, the total cost of health care and long-term care for those suffering from dementia and Alzheimer's was estimated at $236 billion. So step up for your electrodes so we can zippity-zap your brain. And of course, further testing is required before Song's device could be approved as a treatment for dementia or Alzheimer's. But if it is able to help those patients regain even part of their lost memory function, the impact would not only be felt by patients themselves, but their families and the economy at large. It's going to save millions of dollars to the economy. So step right up for your new robotic doctor. Researchers built an automated robot that specializes in drilling holes through human skulls. If you guys remember, we covered this back in May of 2017, but I thought this was an appropriate place to insert it again. One trope shared among all of the fictional depictions of a futuristic robot uprising is the idea that because we've taught robots so much on how humans function, we essentially build an enemy that knows all of our weaknesses, ding, ding, what I've been saying all along, and thus how to defeat us appropriately. Well, if humanity ever does find itself in a war against the machines, it might look back on days like today with the utmost contempt. That is because the University of Utah researchers just reported their newest creation, an automated robotic drill that specializes in cutting through human skulls. Now, if anyone ever watched Doctor Who, this reminded me of the Cybermen episode where they were upgrading everybody and putting their brains into Cybermen. Okay, so the robot drill is less an AI monstrosity as it is a potential medical breakthrough. But the concept itself is really the wild part here. The idea was to build a machine that can cut down, and no pun intended, on the time taken for surgeons to make openings in a human patient's skull, which traditionally requires the use of handheld instruments and can take as long as 2.5 hours. That is a long, long time, especially when you consider that the surgery doesn't even actually begin until the skull is successfully sliced open. Oh my God. It increases both the risk of complications and fatigue on the surgeons, and that is not good for anyone involved. The research team, inspired by drilling hardware used in other industries, developed a robot drill rig that can be programmed to make more precise cuts in just minutes. And before the precision begins, doctors perform a CT scan in which they use a map to plot the actions of the drill and then setting up safety zones, don't go over there, so that there is no risk of the drill accidentally causing unwanted trauma. Once the drill is programmed, it can begin its work, and doctors stand by to monitor the actions at all times. And the team is testing. The robot completes cuts 50 times faster than a human surgeon. It was primarily built with the skull in mind, but the drill can also be used on other areas where traditional bone cutting is a long and laborious or imprecise process, including the cutting of the hip. The team now plans, this is just horrifying, let's give the robots the ability to cut us up really fast. The team now plans on selling the technology to surgeons who want a better, faster way to cut bone. Well, that brings me to the next story. This happened in China. This was just the other day, November 18th, 2017. Robot doctors come a step closer as a machine passes the medical exam with flying colors. One of the world's first robot doctors has passed its medical exams with flying colors, and Yao Yi was put through his paces in the test with his human counterparts and showed that he had mastered the skills for the jobs. Researchers got him ready for his big day by inputting knowledge from dozens of medical books over the past year, but rather than just spit back out data during the exam, he also had to show a reasoning process for treating a given symptom. The robot scored 465 points out of 600 when he passed China's national medical licensing exam. And this was better than what his handlers had expected, said the makers of the robot at Tsinghua University in Beijing. Its score is 96 points above the acceptance line, says Wu Ji, the deputy boss of its electronic engineering department. And this shows that it has indeed mastered the medical knowledge and clinical knowledge, and that it has owned the basic ability to employ its knowledge to solve some problems. So here comes our robot doctor I've warned you about. Wu says that Ziyi sat his exam in a separate room to his human candidates, while nearly 10 staff members had to prepare his special test. We had to make an electronic edition of the paper test for it with the content the same as the paper edition, said a worker at the National Medical Examination Center. Zhao Yi showed that he could beat his flesh and bone counterparts with knowledge. And we should say that robots are superior to people in memory and storage capacity, as well as computing ability, said Wu. But he added that it also showed a human approach when it came to treating sick people. Quite a few questions are case analyses. That is, you are informed of basic conditions of a patient and some of their symptoms. Then you have to tell what disease it is, what treatment you should adopt, and what medicines they should take. Many questions are like this. Such complicated questions cannot be answered only by searching. Therefore, it is essential for a reasoning process based on knowledge and a probability model. But researchers also warned that Zhao Yi also had a long way to go before becoming a qualified doctor. They have invited medical experts to help him learn clinical experience and case diagnostics. But for now, go put him to work in an emergency room. Zhao Yi will be at the aid of a human medic rather than actually replace one. What it can do at present is to offer some possible suggestions to doctors so as to help doctors find where the problems lie more rapidly or to avoid some risks. So what do you think about that? Now, wait, let's go one more, because there is another robotic surgeon, not one that drills skulls, but one that is quite adept at cutting human flesh. And this was from October 13th, 2017, out of IEEE Spectrum. In a flesh-cutting task, autonomous robot surgeons beat human surgeons. Now, this is going to put some very white-collar jobs out of work. Imagine that you are on an operating table waiting for surgeons to cut a tumor out of your flesh. You want their cuts to be as precise and as accurate as possible, leaving behind no tumor fragments that might cause the cancer to recur, yet also not removing too much of the healthy tissue. Rather than an expert human surgeon, you might want the smart tissue automation robot, more affectionately known as STAR, hovering over you. In a recent set of experiments, STAR's inventors showed that it can make precise cuts better than an expert surgeon, damaging less of the surrounding flesh. The researchers presented their results at a recent robotics conference called the IROS 2017. I really believe that this is the future of surgery, says the study co-author Axel Krieger, an assistant professor of mechanical engineering at the University of Maryland. I believe this will come about first for small subfunction surgeries and then get more complex, Krieger told IEEE. Similar to autonomous cars, where small features such as brake assist slowly morphed into more and more autonomy, I absolutely would trust a robot for my surgery once it is fully developed and validated. STAR has previously pulled off some impressive surgical feats. In 2016, the system sewed together two segments of a pig intestine with stitches that were more regular and leak-resistant than those of an experienced surgeon. For the current study, the researchers went to a butcher shop and purchased three varieties of pig tissue. That would be skin, fat, and muscle. And before they tested the system against human surgeons, STAR first had to prove its ability to make precision cuts in these three types of irregular soft tissue, which can resist cutting tools and then give way abruptly, causing the tool to make inaccurate cuts. STAR does its job by visually tracking both its intended cutting path and its cutting tool and constantly adjusts its plan to accommodate movement. For this visual tracking system, the robot relies on tiny marks that researchers place on the tissue beforehand, which show up in its near-infrared camera, and then researchers therefore call STAR a semi-autonomous robot. After registering the markers that the surgeons placed, the robot autonomously performs the cutting. In the video below, it shows STAR slicing through the three tissue types with a hot electrosurgical tool, and the visible human in the shot is just holding the vacuum to suck away the vapors produced by the cutting. The smell of burning fat and tissue can get pretty bad, he says. Well, this is horrifying. Let's teach robots to slice up human and pig flesh.